What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Dr. Sheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show empowering women with truthful information so they can make the best decisions possible regarding their health and well-being. And by the way, this is also true for men, so I am glad you're here with me today. As always, I do my best to provide you with leading-edge information, knowledge, research, the kind of information that has a practical application to your lives. And as always, this is a chance to really learn, grow, and expand your horizons. A couple of things I always like to remind everyone. I have a website that is just filled with such fantastic information, many articles, teleseminars. I have a great newsletter that and special reports if you opt into my website. So visit whatwomenmustknow.com. And when you're at whatwomenmustknow.com, all of the radio shows that I do, this one and the show that I do on Sundays called the Women's Healing Circle, are archived on that radio show. At least you can get to the archives by going to the website, whatwomenmustknow.com. So it's a great place to find your way in all sorts of interesting directions. And one other thing, when you go to What Women Must Know, you'll also find a link there to a fantastic 9-week teleseminar series called Turn Back the Clock, How to Rejuvenate Your Hormones, Your Health, and Your Life Naturally. We've had amazing guests speakers on this 9-week series. It's every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We have two more sessions, one coming up tomorrow with Dr. Howard Murad, who many of you know has a fantastic line of skincare products, but we're talking about his latest book that addresses cellular hydration as a key to rejuvenation. So that's really a must for everybody. And next week we have he's not a doctor. His name is Angelo Druda. I think of him as a doctor because he's my doctor. He is a master Chinese herbalist, and he wrote a book called The Tao of Rejuvenation, and he is sharing with us some of the secrets from the tradition of Chinese medicine to help rejuvenate the body. So that will round up our 9-week teleseminar series. But here's the good news. All of the sessions have been recorded and are freely available. So if you go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, you'll see a link to get to the place where you need to sign up for the teleseminar series. And that website, by the way, is called healthywomanseminar.com. That's healthywomanseminar.com. Sign up there. You'll get access to the last two remaining calls and access to all the previous interviews that we have done. Together, it's probably the most comprehensive program to help you learn how to truly, not literally, but figuratively, turn back the clock to greater health. So I just want you to be sure to have this great information. And we're going to be talking about a subject that I find particularly fascinating, and I hope you will too. If you have never been exposed to this topic or subject or are a little skeptical about it all, I really want you to listen and pay attention, because the knowledge that we're receiving today can truly, truly, truly help you navigate through the vicissitudes of life. You know, whether you're up or down, whether times are challenging, whether you are on a roll with things, you need to gain greater knowledge and awareness of the cycles that are happening in your life. And you know, we all have cycles in our life, and we have cycles for a good purpose. And my guest today is going to help us understand what I'm, you know, what I'm referring to as the cycles of life, and how to find a map to navigate yourself through your journey of life, and how to take advantage of whatever the learnings are in your life that are occurring at this moment in time. So what I'm talking about is the ancient science and art, the wisdom of astrology. And to help us understand what this tool is all about, and I use this personally, I've used this for many, many years, it has just been so profound in helping me through times of change. So I know what's going on and work with the process rather than not knowing and therefore making up my own stories or staying so frightened and terrified I was paralyzed and not able to move forward. So we're going to be exploring this ancient art and science with my guest today, Robert Ayres. We haven't had Robert on for a really, really long time, so I thought it was absolutely way overdue. We need to bring him back. And just let me introduce Robert. He is an international teacher of meditation astrology. And he has also, aside from his deep roots with astrology and meditation and a spiritual knowledge and a spiritual way of life, he also has been a part of high finance, and he worked in Asia for many years as part of the finance community. So he kind of lives in different worlds. He's had experience with the high finance world, and he has experience in the world of astrology and meditation, and is able to take his experience from all those different worlds and help each and every one of us understand the journey that this life is revealing. And now that we are in challenging times, as we all know, I thought it also would be useful if Robert would give us a little insight into what the year ahead holds for us, generally speaking, and maybe some tips of how we should proceed in perhaps areas of finance or health and nutrition or whatever. So I am so thrilled that Robert was able to make some time to be with us today. He has a busy practice, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the show, Robert.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's always great to have you on the show. You know, I'm a big fan of yours. I think your work is so profound. You know, for some people, astrology may sound, I don't know, nanu-nanu, but in actual fact, it is a very ancient and highly regarded science. And I call it a science and an art. You may want to correct me on that. But it has its roots, you know, going back thousands of years, and is proven to be a very valuable tool. So can you just kind of clarify that for people who may not know what it is, or may just think it's those little two-liners they read in the paper every day?
No, good point. Yes, it is an art and a science, and it is one of the most ancient bodies of knowledge of mankind. When we go back and study the ancient cultures and civilizations of the world, we're going to find that it was a universal part of their culture in terms of the study of the stars. And, you know, we respect opinions of people who have not had any experience or exposure with astrology. But really, quite frankly, all that they really need to do is to have exposure to it or actually have their chart done, and they become believers right away. Because the knowledge that is contained within their natal chart or horoscope, or the positioning of the stars and the planets at the time a person is born, it is really their life plan laid out in a very cosmic way, a map of their soul, a karmic report card, many different ways of describing it. But it is for people, even skeptics, that have their chart done and really are not in a position to really deny the truth of the patterns of their life that are revealed there, and the cycles and timings of events that, you know, really basically are undeniable, that make people believers in it. And it isn't just on an individual level. We can do charts for countries, companies, all kinds of things. So what it really reveals to us is an underlying design of life that is orchestrated or designed, if you will, from the cosmos. And it is that we are cosmic beings. We tend to forget this, and that we are spiritual beings that come from the spiritual world and then come into physical embodiment here on Earth, but that we are these unique creatures that are both spiritual and material in nature, and that the natural tendency once we come into our body and get focused on the Earth is most people forget their connection with the spiritual worlds and the primacy of that, yet we will still find it continues to influence us all of the time. And to the degree that we pay attention and do research and investigate, we are going to see that these influences are all-pervasive, whether it's to each individual or the collectivity of a group of a nation or however we want to look at it. And it is an art. In one respect, it's a science because there's a great deal of mathematics and geometry that is involved in really calculating where the stars and planets were at the time someone was born and also where they happen to be today or at the moment in question, to really see what kind of influences that are taking place in terms of the planets and in terms of the stars. But it also, so it's very scientific, and that when we get to the ziggurats and the pyramids, and I don't care if it's the Mayan pyramids or the ones in ancient Mesopotamia or whatever, these were observatories. They were built with huge cultural, collective, human effort by those societies to establish the best viewing of the heavens by the priest astrologers in terms of really determining what kind of influences that the society was going to be dealing with. And they were advisors to the rulers in that they basically were able to forecast what was going to be happening, and so that things could be prepared and dealt with in a wise way. Because it isn't just what is happening, but it's also why it is happening. And so there's a great deal of profound wisdom and knowledge. And it is truly an art. Somebody can look at, you know, a particular chart or particular positions of planets and stars in the heavens, but it is really an art to be able to understand what that symbolic message means. And so it is truly an art and a science. And actually, we will find that the influence of astrology has been growing in recent times, maybe behind the veil, but I'll give you an example. You referred to my background in investment banking and finance, which I was in internationally for 22 years. If the money managers were on Wall Street and hedge funds and et cetera, were really honest, and there's very definite reasons why they wouldn't be honest, you would find that a very large percentage of them use astrological information in terms of managing money and making investments, because it has been proven very practically from the standpoint of making money that astrology works, that cycles and timings of various planets and stars have a definite influence in the financial markets. Now, why wouldn't they proclaim this? Because, you know, the primary attitude of society would think that this was superstitious and bunk, and if somebody had a lot of money that they were placing with a particular manager and they knew that they were using astrological methods in terms of managing their money, they would probably pull their money because of not really trusting in it, just because of the overall prejudice that is there. But if they would probably find out that their money manager, hedge fund manager, investment banker, whatever, was utilizing this information not solely, but as an important component in terms of their decision making, in terms of times to pull back, times to go forward, et cetera, in terms of financial situations. we are going to find also, because I also have many, many, many clients that are hedge fund managers, money managers, mutual fund managers, managers of money for extremely wealthy people or institutions, and they call me regularly for advice. So this is something that is quite real. Second, I've been also very involved with doctors, both traditional and alternative, in terms of astrology, in terms of health crises, health and healing issues. And we're going to find that the knowledge and understanding that the human being is actually the microcosm of the macrocosm, or the very design of the human being, is such that all the stars and the planets of the cosmos, of the universe, are structured inside each and every one of us. And they form the glands and the organs and the bones and the skin and everything else. So when we really talk about the actual influence of the stars and the planets, it is from the very beginning in the very creation, design, and structure of the human body. And within that, then, based upon a person's natal chart, we can see the inherent strengths and weaknesses of the physical body and various conflicts and harmonies that the person is born with. And then these will get activated in various ways by transiting planets from time to time, which will result in health crises. And it will also show us what the underlying issues or karmas or problems are, because it really, we can only create a body that we've karmically earned, and it all comes back to the law of karma, the law of cause and effect. And so we're going to find that when we really do encounter health issues and health crises, yes, they will manifest and make us aware of them in terms of pain and discomfort at the physiological level. But the deeper understanding is that physiological crisis is really a spiritual crisis, that within each organ and within each part of the body is centered a specific quality of consciousness that makes up our humanity, that is inherent to who we are. And the degree to which an organ or a part of the body can give expression to that consciousness will be either supported or inhibited by the actual karma of that individual in terms of their patterning of giving expression to these principles or qualities of consciousness in prior lives. And so it will ultimately, when we talk about a health crisis, it will relate to underlying crises or issues in consciousness or principles in consciousness that are represented by those particular planets or signs of the zodiac or these kinds of things.
Bob, can you wait one second? Can you give an example of that? Because that's kind of abstract, and I want people to understand how it could be a practical, practically what it means. So do you have an example that you can give?
Yeah, I mean, for example, if we take the principle, an issue of cancer, for example, which is something that is very, very prevalent today, we will find that there are specific planets, specifically the planet Saturn, but we will also find the moon involved and other planets too, because there's many, many different types of cancer. But if we wanted to look at the underlying principle or issue spiritually that would be the root cause behind cancer, and there will be many forms of it, so again, we're just being general at this point, it is the planet Saturn. And if we go deeply into Saturn, it's the planet of karma, but it's also the principle of fear and inhibition and blockage and obstruction and limitation and anxiety and worry and doubt and issues related to self-esteem and self-worth. They relate to a blockage or an inhibition or a fundamental fear that grips the individual that then inhibits and blocks the proper functioning of a particular organ or of a particular part of the body. So it is not able to function correctly and harmoniously with the other parts of the body. And so, I mean, I'm just using that as a simple example.
Can we stay with this topic for a moment?
Sure.
You know, different ages have brought different diseases. You know, we've had problems with all the infectious diseases in the beginning of the 20th century. Now cancer is the number one disease affecting people. I think it's just about surpassed heart disease. And we talk about the increased exposure to toxins and poor diet. Those are, you know, and then stress. They're all considered major factors driving this, you know, epidemic. But is there a unique thing happening astrologically? Why cancer, for instance, has become the dominant disease process going on in our society right now?
Well, it's one of the ones, and yeah, we can look at, and that's what, you know, present medicine is used to doing, and actually I should say present natural science, is they really look at life and the world from the standpoint of the physical reality being the only reality, and that if you can't weigh it and measure it and touch it, etc., that it isn't real and it doesn't exist. So when science is looking for a cause of something in life, in the world, they're going to look for a physical cause, because that is basically their paradigm limits them. They deny, quite frankly, the reality of the spiritual world. They deny other possible sources and causes, and unfortunately that then limits significantly their ability to accurately diagnose or analyze a problem. And from a spiritual perspective and understanding of the very structure of life and of creation, it would really be saying that everything in the universe, even the physical, is spiritual, and that everything that manifests in a physical manner in the physical world, including ourselves of being born into a physical body from the spiritual world, has to do with a lowering of the vibrational frequency to where something that is spiritual or of the light actually takes concrete physical form here on Earth. And so we have, the truth of the matter is that the causes of everything in the physical are spiritual, meaning this is the source, and this is the source from which everything comes. And to deny and not investigate or explore the spiritual as the causes for why things are in the physical, I mean, if we look for the causes of what happens in the physical, for what happens in the physical just from physical sources, it's like a dog or a cat chasing its tail. It will never find them. Yes, these other things, as you had mentioned, can be contributing factors, but if we look at and take cancer, for example, it's an epidemic, and it would relate back to a point that we are, humanity is a point, is at a point, and the actual financial crisis is an outer manifestation of it. It is that we've come to a point where we need to open up in consciousness to really acknowledge the reality of the spiritual and consciously make it a part of our daily life. And there is a fundamental blockage in many people's consciousness about opening up to the spirituality and opening up to a reality or a paradigm that really does incorporate the spiritual. And one of the things that will be a very, very, not universal, but very, very common experience for people who are having cancer, and especially the struggle to find treatment that heals, or the very process of going through the crises that are involved, is that they often do, as a result, open up to spirit and realize that it's creating a crisis for the individual to open up to the deeper aspects of their being and soul. It's a physiological crisis, but quite frankly, it's a spiritual crisis. And to, you know, it depends on karma and the situation and all of these individual karma and these kinds of situations. But we will find that when a health crisis takes place, it is trying to get the attention of the individual that something is very out of whack in their life and very out of balance, and that there is a spiritual crisis going on. And one of the things about astrology is that it can tell us what that spiritual crisis is, or that crisis in consciousness, or that particular self-sabotaging, self-limiting pattern of thinking, feeling, and action that has come to the foreground of their life that has resulted in a health crisis that needs to be addressed, and basically just treating the symptoms at a physical level is not really healing the underlying issue. And whether the individual is motivated enough or has enough understanding to make the needed changes in thinking and feeling and action or consciousness as a result of a health crisis, it determines whether they've healed the issue or not. And if they don't heal it in this lifetime and they just treat the symptoms, it will come up again, or they will have to deal with it in a future lifetime.
Yeah, so there's an underlying lesson that is part of the process that we're here to learn and understand, you know, in terms of that spiritual dimension.
Well, and the bigger picture, Cheryl, is that it's about the evolution of consciousness. When we have the spiritual paradigm or perspective of understanding human evolution, but not just human evolution, cosmic evolution, everything is growing and evolving to a higher stage of expression. And that specific goal for humanity, each and every one of us, is traditionally what is called enlightenment, self-realization, cosmic consciousness, which is to unfold the full potential in consciousness of the individual to where one reclaims, as an individual of the universal, the cosmic status, cosmic meaning all-inclusive, status of consciousness that is our birthright. And we are living in very limited consciousness at the present time, I mean, generally speaking. And these diseases like cancer are basically saying we're in crisis and we have to get beyond fear, which is holding us back from a fuller life, and really be able to grow and expand into a higher consciousness of light and really claim and fulfill the destiny and even the design physiologically of what we are capable of doing. I mean, as you know, most psychologists and psychiatrists agree that most of us are only using 5 to 10% of our mental potential. Well, what the heck is going on with the other 90-95%? It's showing the latent power and ability that is there to be actualized and utilized that most people are too lazy or ignorant of the potential abilities and opportunities that they have that they do not take advantage of to put into dynamic action and live and unfold. And when a person comes to the point of denying or limiting this, it results in disease.
Right. Now, we're about to take a break, so hang in there, Bob, and hang in there, everyone, because when we come back, we're going to be getting some insights as to what is ahead for us in the year 2011, and you don't want to miss this. So you're listening to What Women Must Know with me, Dr. Cheryl Selman, and my special guest, Robert Ayers. Hang in there. We will be right back.
Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
This is Dr. Molly Barrow with a holiday tip. The holidays can add extra stress to your busy life. Try to remember that this season is about love and not a performance that is graded. Relax. Tell people that you care with a kind word, a smile, and a helpful hand. Think about what this holiday means to you, and remember that you get to enjoy it, too. This is Dr. Molly Barrow wishing you a joyous season filled with delicious food, great friends, and loving family. From all of us at Progressive Radio Network, happy holidays.
South of the border.
Hello, I'm Johnny Mueller, and I have a brand new show called The Expat Files, and it's all about living, working, playing, or retiring in Latin America. I know what it's like to buy land, build a house, start a business. I've been through it in a dozen Latin countries. So, if you're thinking about moving down or you're just curious, be sure to listen in Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Down Mexico way.
I'm Elaine Snuffa, host producer of Evolving Ideas. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and global on the Internet. Join me each week on the Progressive Radio Network to explore the universe and our relationship to it.
Gary Knoll. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hi there, and welcome back, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and my very special guest today is Robert Ayres. He is an international teacher of meditation astrology. He has many years of experience using this very profound science and art to help us gain more knowledge and insight and wisdom as we travel through our life and deal with the many challenges that life presents to us. Robert, we were talking about understanding some of the experiences that people have or may have, and talking about the growing incidence of cancer as an example of what the opportunity is and how that can be perceived in a person's chart. But I thought we should really have a look at what 2011 is giving us the opportunity to learn. I'll put it that way.
Well, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, there's a lot to learn. 2011, I mean, this is something we could actually talk about for hours, but I think most of us are aware that we are in the midst of a very significant global financial crisis, and that is a symptom, I'm not going to go into details, but of the type of thing we were talking about, health issues and cancer. It is a spiritual crisis, ultimately, and again, it has to do with correctly balancing, harmonizing, and integrating our material life, which is quite real and quite important, or the ability to survive in terms of food, clothing, and shelter, and economic systems, and all of these kinds of things, with the spiritual life, which has to do with greater purpose, greater intention, than just the utilitarian kinds of intentions that most people look at. You know, if it works, then great. Or, you know, if we look at something just to the degree that it may be of material physical use. And we have to broaden our awareness in that regard. And the bigger picture is that this crisis began, it has to do with a Pluto cycle, and the planet Pluto is a 250-year cycle. And Pluto entered into the sign of the zodiac Capricorn for the first time in 250 years back in January of 2007. And it's a 17-year cycle. We don't actually come out of it until 2024. And Capricorn happens to be the sign of the zodiac that rules government and business and worldly power and authority. So it really relates directly to the power and authority structures, the institutions in the world that establish organization within society so that there is not chaos, so that there is an orderliness within society. And so when we look to governmental and corporate institutions or power structures, we're going to be seeing that these are kind of what establish the activities within a society. Pluto rules volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, the atomic bomb. And Pluto is the planet of change, and it's very, very, very intense, and it hasn't been here for 250 years. And the way that Pluto works is through death and rebirth. It tends to destroy or blow away that which is dysfunctional and no longer working in order to create a rebirth. The actual symbol of Pluto is the caterpillar turning into the butterfly, the phoenix rising from the ashes. And so when we get into 2011, we're 4 years into the 17-year cycle that's really calling the tone for this whole phase. And what started in the private sector of finance and banking as a crisis of over-leveraging and overextending and borrowing and debt has shifted over to the governments. It's shifted out of the private sector over into the public sector as a result of all the governments stepping in and bailing out the private sector, the banks, etc. And so now this issue has shifted. We still have a very weak economy, even though there are signs of it, of hope, and where we see where things could be improving in certain respects. But the underlying problems and issues have not really been dealt with in our country, and it's really brought the crisis to the world. It has to do with the real estate industry and the banking system and mortgages, et cetera. We still have not even begun to deal with this issue effectively. In fact, the numbers of foreclosures, defaults, and bankruptcies are increasing, and they will through 2011. And I don't mean just in the United States, I mean globally. When we look at Europe, and this is where I anticipate the next phase of the crisis to be precipitated. It was in the European Union. When we look at what Greece has gone through recently and Ireland, and we look at Portugal and Italy and Spain, we have what are called sovereign debt crises, where the governments have taken over the banking. If we look at Ireland, for example, two-thirds of the banks in Ireland are now owned by the Irish government. Why? Because the Irish government has stepped in to prop them up in order to make them so that they don't collapse. And so the Irish government has ended up owning these banks and also the liabilities, etc. And this is a problem, and we're seeing that this is happening and has been happening in Europe, and we've had various issues with it here in the U.S., but it hasn't reached the crisis point yet in the U.S. that it has in Europe, to where there have been a number of bailouts and hastily organized meetings by the European Central Bank and various countries that are creating bailout funds to kind of convince the markets, the bond markets, that it's under control. Because what ends up happening is the bond markets, where these governments go and borrow money to keep their governments going, if the bond markets think that the risk is increasing, then the actual cost of borrowing goes up in terms of the interest rates that are being charged. Greece, for example, I mean, its interest rates went up over 100% in a matter of a month in terms of their borrowing costs, which, of course, when we look at then the government's revenue from taxes, then a much larger percentage is going to servicing debt as opposed to providing services. And so we have a problem, and we see that happening in Ireland, and the bailouts are there to convince the markets, everything is okay, you don't need to raise interest rates, keep your borrowing costs low in terms of these governments' needs to regularly go out and borrow money to keep functioning. That crisis will continue to get worse in 2011. And there's a very good chance that it will spread to the United States. One of the problems is that the federal stimulus that was instituted several years ago, those funds are running out. And we're going to be finding, and with true understanding, it's correct, but the timing is probably a little bit off. The strong wave of austerity measures within European governments in terms of slashing and cutting spending very significantly in many of those countries, and raising costs, like the riots that were just taking place this weekend and the end of last week in Great Britain, where they tripled the cost of tuition for students. These kinds of things are happening all over Europe, and there's a great deal of rebellion and demonstrations, et cetera. And there is a need to curb the borrowing and the debt, the huge buildup of debt by sovereign governments, because they're basically potentially poised for governments to become bankrupt as a result of taking on the problems of the private banking sector. That situation has the real possibility in 2011 of also infecting the U.S. markets too. The worst, unfortunately, is not over. We're still kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop when we really look at the financial markets and the stock market, and that the potential for there to be another stock market crash and another banking crisis is still quite real. It has actually been put off and pushed into the future as a result of the bank bailouts and the stimulus programs, et cetera, that have kind of papered over the underlying crisis, the hope being that we would be able to dig ourselves out of the mess through the stimulus and the bailouts to where, when they did run out, we would, the private sector would have gotten back on its feet and really started functioning in terms of creating jobs and creating revenues for taxes, et cetera, et cetera. But most of the forecasts that we see for the upcoming year really are not giving us a lot of hope that there is going to be that strength from the private sector to get out of this mess and improve employment and improve the financial situation. When we look at the U.S. chart, because as I had mentioned earlier, we can do a chart of a company or a person or a country or whatever. And when we look at the U.S. chart, and it's more directly applicable to ourselves, of course, being Americans, we're in the midst of a Saturn return, which happens once every 30 years. And Saturn is the planet that rules the house of money in the U.S. chart. And Saturn is this planet of fear and anxiety and worry and depression and sadness and loneliness and life is a struggle. And it is the planet of conservatism, so it has a great deal to do with, not that we're surprised, but the midterm congressional elections, to where we saw a very strong showing by the GOP and the conservative arm of the GOP with the Tea Partiers, because what they represent is a very conservative outlook in terms of what government should be doing, government spending, the role of government, these kinds of things. And Saturn actually rules conservatism. And so we see that for the first time in 30 years that transiting Saturn in the U.S. chart has come back to where it was when our country was born, back on July 4, 1776. And it will emphasize, because this particular aspect continues, it started in November just last month. And it goes through this next summer of 2011. And it will tend to reinforce the political and economic conservatism that which it would support austerity. It would be supporting cutting budgets, cutting spending, and these kinds of things. And so we would expect that to be high on the agenda, which, of course, has its implications because the government has been the spender while the private sector has really not stepped forward to take its true place. And if we cut off government spending or reduce it significantly, it also can make the economic situation even worse. And that is probably what's going to be happening in Europe. Even though the intentions are good, the timing may not be so good. And that it will tend towards a contraction of the overall economy, because when we start talking about the United States and Europe, we're talking about two of the biggest economic engines of the globe, and that they would be going into austerity, cutting budgets, would feed into the economic contraction that is in process, which is a basic global deleveraging of the financial system. And it also is bringing up, because I also have a chart of the Federal Reserve, and these are topics, I mean, we could talk about for ages, but it does show that the Federal Reserve is going to be in crisis this next year. This last monetary move of what's called qualitative easing 2, or the buying of long-term bonds in the market to keep interest rates down in order to encourage borrowing in both on individual and corporate levels, isn't working. And basically, the Federal Reserve has run out of tools, run out of things to be able to do to stimulate the economy. They've thrown everything that they have at phase one, which, as phase two unfolds, is going to be they're going to have little to be able to deal with it. And the reality, probably, unfortunately, with our government, is that with the midterm election results, we are probably looking at 2 years of political gridlock in Congress, to where there will not be the political will or ability to really effectively, our government effectively, deal with the next phase of the crisis. And so there can be problems arising in 2011 that have been put off. It's like putting things off that we didn't really want to deal with or know how to deal with, that have the potential of rearing their ugly heads again and creating a phase two that can be difficult and challenging.
So on bringing it down to kind of a personal level, what are some of your recommendations for people of how to best survive and thrive in 2011? Do you have some specific recommendations,
yeah,
whether it's financially, whether it's health-wise, whether it's, career areas? Obviously, it's best if people had a, consultation. We can look at their specific charts. But as general trends, what would you suggest?
Yeah, and you mentioned a number of areas, again, which we would be able to talk about for hours. But if the basic thing is, when we're in a contractionary environment for 17 years, we're 4 years into this 17-year cycle. So the basic principle is cutting overhead. It's simplifying our lifestyle. It's cutting expenses. It is basically, this is not going away. This situation that people think, we're going to come out of this here in a year or two, it's not going to happen. We're talking about a structural death and rebirth and reformulating of these economic and political systems. It's going to take time. People still have not realized the extent and depth of what needs to be done. From our individual standpoints, it is about simplifying our life and getting our priorities straight and cutting out those excesses that we've tended to accumulate in terms of our time and our money. because it wants to get us more back to basics and back to a simple lifestyle where there is room for the spirit, where there is room to connect with the bases of life, the foundations of life, in a realistic, genuine way, to where buying things and material goods has tended to consume our money, time, and attention, to where it has camouflaged the real values and the really important things in our life. So it's getting back to basics, and it's simplifying our life to get a more healthy balance within our life. This is not all happening by accident. There is a deeper purpose, and it is to bring balance back into our lives. From an investment standpoint, the markets are too dangerous. Interest rates are going up, which we can lose a lot of money in the bond market. We would hold off. Later there will be a play, maybe late 2011 or into 2012, where bonds make sense, but it's very dangerous right now. What we'd be recommending is, short-term CDs and banks, 3 to 6 month maturities. Right now, it's not about making money. The principle is preservation of capital, preserving what you have already got. And, there's if we really go to the extreme, which we didn't really get into, of the dollar being significantly under stress internationally in the currency markets, and the conscious devaluation of the dollar by the Federal Reserve policies, that's why a lot of people are investing in gold and silver, because it's a store of value, universally recognized since the beginning of time that when we are concerned about the value of our currency, that is going to be a wise move. So you're going to see that. But basically, it's just holding tight in that regard. As far as work, one of the things that is happening in terms of career and the overall unemployment and the crises here is to stimulate creativity and to stimulate individuals looking at their lives and their abilities and their situations in new creative ways. It's about stepping outside of the box and really looking at possibilities that we really have not looked at, because we've tended to look in a very limited paradigm in terms of work and service and that which we are really capable of doing and generating an income and creating a life based on that. We are very creative beings, so as we look at these crises from a career standpoint, and we're looking at roadblocks or we're looking at no job, it's there, quite frankly, as an opportunity to really find ourselves and really find a calling and a way to make a living that is much more soulful, much more fulfilling, both spiritually and materially. So we would encourage people to look at it as an opportunity. And I'm being very brief just because of time. Mm-hmm. When we look at health and these kinds of issues, yes, increasingly, with the new health program that Congress passed, it's very difficult to discern at this point what kind of effect it really is going to have, if any. At this point, I can't really see any benefits, but it really hasn't had time to take form yet. It has been driving up some of the costs. We want to understand, and I'm sure, Cheryl, it's a lot of what you talk about, generally speaking, it's to force us back to healing ourselves. Mm-hmm. The costs that are going to be continuing to increase in terms of health care is, first of all, to really create lifestyles that are healthy, to really examine and look at balance in our lives, to look at healing ourselves and alternative methods that are really more, in terms of spirit and soul, more conducive, less damaging in terms of our overall health. So it is, again, let's take responsibility, each and every one of us, for our physiological, emotional, mental well-being. And let's do preventative medicine. Let's be doing exercise. Let's be improving our diet. Let's be looking at issues that we have and really approaching them in a new way and changing them, because ultimately we are responsible for our lives. The government isn't responsible. The company you work for is not responsible. These things, we are ultimately responsible. And that's part of Capricorn, is that this responsibility, the society that we have created, we have basically abdicated our responsibility to various institutions, where really that is not correct. We need to take that responsibility back, take responsibility for our lives in every respect and rebuild, and we are going to find that is necessary in terms of every aspect of our life.
Well, you've certainly given us a lot to chew on there, you know, the message to me is a positive one. Even though it's going to force people to change, it's going to force people to reevaluate, it's going to force people to get more responsible, whether it's with their finances or whether it's with their health, ultimately the outcome, by being forced to, in many circumstances, make changes, the end result will be allowing us to live a life that's much more in harmony with who we are and with a greater purpose that we've come here to fulfill.
Absolutely, so. And that would be the message. And it's understanding the basic principle. These are cosmic laws. Crisis is opportunity.
Yeah. You know, let's give your website, and I do want to say that if anyone is going through some challenging times or you're uncertain about things or, you know, you're involved in a venture of some sort, this is where astrology really plays a major role, comes to the fore in being able to give insight and guidance as to what's going on. It's not, we really don't call it predictive, right, Bob? You wouldn't say it's predicting anything.
A person always has free will, but it will show basically the karma that's activated or the issues or situations that a person, it's now time for them to face, to deal with. And so we can really be very objective and accurate about the timing of someone's karma manifesting, and we want to be not abstract here. It's about the people and karma manifests in a person's life as the people and circumstances in their life. But we also want to be very clear that we have the free will choice in terms of how we choose to deal with it. And so freedom is always involved.
It's like having a mentor when you're going through a major period of your life and major decisions or major, you know, challenges. It's having a mentor to give you a perception of and perspective of a situation so you can make the best possible choice of finding the easiest way through, I guess I could say. So let's give your website, Bob.
Yes, my website is astrologicalalchemy.com.
So Astrological Alchemy, if people want to talk to you more or set up a time to have a consultation, mm-hmm. they can do that through your website.
Yes, and also they can call me. My phone number is 530-550-1118.
Well, Bob, as always, it's so enlightening talking with you. I really want to thank you for your time, and you've given us a great opportunity to get a perspective of what is really going on and the best steps to take to support us during this cycle of our collective time together here. So thank you so much. And,
well, thank you, Cheryl.
Wishing you well and wishing you a very happy new year.
Thank you very much, and the same to you.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye.
And everyone, thank you for joining in. You've been listening to What Women Must Know with Dr. Cheryl Selman and my very special guest today, Robert Ayers, who's giving us some astrological insight into the year ahead. And until next time, remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.